Welcome to Mindshack True Crime. This is your host, Bruce McGuire.
And Marcel Powers.
And today we're talking about morbid fascination and the nature of true crime and true crime popularity. As always, if you like the podcast, you can donate to our PayPal. Just check the link in the description. Make sure you subscribe to the channel, hit the bell for notifications so you get updates, and allow your device to send you those updates. Make sure you have that setting taken care of. You could also like our Facebook page, check us out, Twitter, Reddit, Patreon, and patrons do get priority if you have case requests or subject requests for us to cover, and you can also select which podcasters you want to cover which topic that you are requesting. So, Maxwell, when did you first become interested in true crime?
I don't really know, but...
When you were a kid, were you kind of, like, fascinated with serial killers or crimes or grisly crimes? I mean, my exposure to true crime kind of started with horror movies and serial killers and some of these documentaries, missing persons. I mean, it was so, as a child, watching it as a child, it's kind of, it has a very scary effect on you. You don't want to go out alone. You know, there's different situations. I mean, I do have a couple of close call encounters I don't think I've shared on the podcast yet. I don't know. I might save them for another podcast. But yeah, I've encountered some shady individuals as a child, and I had a couple of close calls. I don't know if they were serial killers, but they were definitely shady individuals looking to abduct a child. So just watching these movies and documentaries, it's this bizarre curiosity. It's not that it's obviously not pleasant information. It's not like watching a pleasant TV show or a comedy or even an action movie. It's very dark subject matter. It's exploring the dark side of humanity. What did that draw you in at some point, or was it just kind of always in the background just from news reports, or what is your exposure or introduction to grisly crime?
I guess for most people, well, for me at least, I'm trying to think back as far as I can, but the first, like, kind of serial murder movie, it wasn't a documentary, it was a movie. This dude ran around naked with a knife and just killed people.
Is that American Psycho? What are you talking about?
That could be it. I don't know, but it was in the 80s.
Oh, that was an American Psycho then.
No. Well, I think American Psycho was remade. It might have been.
Oh, was
American
it? I didn't even know that. I think American Psycho.
I know for a fact that I saw a fucking movie with this dude with a surgical glove and a freaking knife, and he's running on the streets. You know, these police lights chasing him, and he's, you know, freaking killing people and shit.
But you don't remember the name of the movie?
I don't fucking know, but it sounds like American Psycho.
Huh. Yeah, no, American Psycho, the only scene like that I remember, I think he had a chainsaw and he was chasing somebody in a stairwell. I don't know, I saw the movie when it first came out. That was a while ago. I don't really remember it too well.
You know what's weird about that movie? That guy, I guess I'm mixing it up in my brain, the guy that acted in the modern American Psycho.
Christian Bale?
Christian Bale looks exactly like that in the 80s. Like that guy. I don't know.
Man, we can't trust. If we've learned anything on Mindshock, it's that we can't trust Maxwell Powers' memory. But anyway,
I'm thinking that's the first. Well, not really, because I did see Psycho. You know, Psycho, the classic.
Yes, yes.
So I saw that.
But did you watch the news? Did you watch the news when you were a kid?
I
remember watching America's Most Wanted, and it was always so scary just that there are these real life.
Yeah, you know what? That could be my first exposure to true crime, America's Most Wanted.
Yeah, that was a lot of people's, and it's so scary because it's not a movie. It's real life.
Yeah.
And it was as a child.
I'm guessing that would be it. I guess it started from a movie, so you get intrigued by, like, damn, why, like, making movies of people killing people, and then America's Most Wanted, they kind of show the real life of what movies you've seen. So that, I think they went along with the movies, I guess, to.
You know what I find? I think what I find interesting is, I think it's a lot about, it's on the nurture side of it, where most people in Western countries that watch the news, they have this morbid fascination, this morbid curiosity regarding true crime, serial killers, all these things. I think at least partially due to the media and what they saw as a kid, especially with, on the news, you're always, it's always sensationalized with all this serial killer on the loose and all these movies that kind of go off of that. And
Well, nowadays it's mostly like school shootings and like mass shootings, and I kind of I still see it in my like Apple News feed because it like I don't read into it a lot of times, but like it does come up. This I think it was recent. Someone I forgot which state, but there was another shooting, and I didn't read into it though.
yeah, I don't. There was a couple shootings recently, but yeah, I try not to watch the news too much. It's very depressing. But
Yeah.
in true crime, I guess that kind of sets it up because when you're a kid and you're exposed to this information, all the missing children, kidnapped people getting killed. There's just a lot of violent crime. And why do you think that the genre itself has just gained so much popularity? I mean, true crime podcasts are the top or one of the top genres for podcasts.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's a ton of true crime podcasts. Obviously, none are as good as Mindshock.
Well, I'm
Obviously, none run the gauntlet of logical fallacies and critical thinking and deductive reasoning, the way that we go over all our cases, as well as other subjects, the paranormal conspiracy. So obviously none of the other podcasts are as good as Mindshock or as unique as Mindshock, but there are quite a few podcasts out there covering different cases. There's podcasts that cover one case only and they run several seasons. They go deep into a single case. And there's other podcasts that cover many other cases, but some of them are kind of weird. Like one of
Yeah,
them is called
some of them are high end, like the Serial.
Serial.
I think it's called, yeah, Serial. That was
Yeah, that one's
really
pretty
good.
good.
I followed like that one podcast story or whatever you call it. That was really high end production because the edit was insane. There was music that yeah, it was pretty good.
Oh, come on, we got music on Mindshack.
The beginning rave music.
Yeah, once we get a little bigger, we'll upgrade our mics and get a full studio and all that jazz. But in the meantime, we'll just continue covering with truth and logic above all else and objectivity. But yeah, the genre of true crime, I mean, some of them are kind of like, it seems like they cater to strange people. For example, I mean, I think there's one podcast called Murder and Martinis where they kind of make a big show about drinking martinis and talking about murder. Like, I mean, I don't know if I was a member, if I was a family member of someone gone missing, I'm not sure that would be my go-to podcast. I don't know. It's almost, I don't want to say it makes light of it, but it's almost putting it in a pure
Well,
entertainment fashion.
I could see it as I think it's actually not bad. It's not a bad name because Martine, well, it's alliteration first off, so it's memorable. So Martine and Murder. Is that what it's called?
I
Or
think it's
Matt?
called Murder and Martinis or Martinis and Murder,
Murder
something
Martine.
like that.
So it's an alliteration, so it's like it's memorable and stuff. But I can see how the image of Martine and Murder, you get that picture at a bar and you're just kind of like letting
Well,
loose
I
and
think
the
I
murder
may.
topic came up,
Well, I
so
think.
that's
Well, from what I saw about it, I saw some photo on Twitter about it. It's that it's I, what I'm guessing are the hosts. They're kind of like just sipping martinis and laughing. So it's like an entertainment vibe. So it's not just the name. It's kind of like the
Well,
presentation of it.
depends on how you really approach it, because sometimes like some names are like really catchy, but when you get to the content, it's like totally the opposite. It's almost like they're playing
Yeah,
off
I
the
know. I just said
opposite
that.
of what they.
I just said that. I said it's
Oh,
not just the
I didn't know
name.
that.
The photo, the visuals were of people laughing and drinking martinis as if it's an entertainment thing. You're going over people. I mean,
Yeah,
obviously
but
the
you didn't. But yeah, but is the content like that or no?
I haven't listened to too much of it. I saw a brief intro and
So you can't tell if you're doing if you're telling the same thing as I did, because they
I'm
could be
talking about the visual. Yeah, but we moved on from just the name. I said it was the visual presentation. It wasn't just the name, because the name, I agree.
not.
I
Yeah,
don't think the name is
I'm
that
interested in the
bad thing.
content now, like whether they're like I'm guessing.
Honestly,
it's quite serious.
Honestly, no. Honestly, I turned it off after about a minute. I think those guys were on the Missing Maura Murray podcast. I think the host, and they were just the vibe kind of matched what I saw on Twitter. To be fair, I haven't listened to a full podcast, so maybe they're not really like that for the full show. But everything seemed the name, the visual presentation, and the very brief snippet that I heard, they all matched what I'm saying. That it was a just for entertainment type setup.
Ah, I see.
And that was I was bringing to my next point. Like, for example, some of these crime conventions, like CrimeCon, it seems like the one aspect of it, just one aspect. I'm not talking about the aspect that's for the families, maintaining awareness and trying to keep these cases in the public eye and get them solved and bring closure to the families. I'm not talking about that. Obviously, that's great. That's why we cover true crime cases. That's why most people do. That's what 90% probably of most podcasts and documentaries do. But there's a certain aspect to it. For example, someone was telling me that at CrimeCon, they even had some kind of booth or presentation or show where, for entertainment, people would sit in a chair, get tied up, and they would be playing the audio of a serial killer torturing somebody. So it's kind of like for fun. They got to. So keep in mind, this isn't some kind of Halloween show.
It's a weird. It's kind of creepy in a way. But like that's weird. I think they're just trying to get you to experience what it's like. I guess I don't know.
It's a little different when it's Halloween and it's all about scaring. But if you're at a crime convention with true crime, I mean, we're talking about people that have lost family members, people that have had family members, children abducted and killed. They have this kind of display. I think it's just poor taste. I mean, just my opinion, of course.
I think I can see it playing this way. I mean, if you can make it serious, like a freaking some psychologist in a lab coat and shit and trying to get you to experience what it's like, so you know, I don't know, I can see that working. But if it's like a fucking like a booth with a company name on a t-shirt and fucking this is the scary chair ride and you're dressed in a monster suit or something, and
well, there's that aspect. It's like some people use true crime as entertainment. So obviously there's a certain morbid fascination with crime in general, with serial killers, like what makes people evil, or what makes this dark side of humanity occur, and it's around us. You can't deny it.
I can see a booth of like, let's say, like when people who don't get the idea of what do you call that when you go along with your criminal? What do you call that again?
Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah. So like, if you're the type of person like you don't know about it and. You say, you're like, well, I wouldn't act like that. And then they have an experimental, like, lab thing. And then you go in it. And then, you, like, if you set
you're
it
reaching,
up...
you're reaching pretty hard, Maxwell. You're really going with these devil's advocate examples.
Well, I'm just saying, if it's a freaking true crime, like a psychologist who wants to explain what Stockholm Syndrome is, he can set up a system where a person can go in 30 minutes and, you know, sign all these forms, you know.
Yeah, I think Stockholm Syndrome is actually kind of rare. In most of the cases we've covered and we've looked at, it seems like Stockholm Syndrome, there's really not a lot. I mean, I suppose the really, really long-term captives, but it might be more prevalent. But I guess we should probably do a dedicated episode on Stockholm Syndrome. But
I don't understand why you're saying rare, because I thought it was like the default of victims to fall into that. I thought, like, why do you say rare?
It's really rare. I mean, look at all these cases where after a year or two, someone escaped from their captor, or they were trying to escape. They were trying to slip messages out. They want to be rescued. The Stockholm syndrome is pretty rare. I haven't seen that many cases of Stockholm syndrome. I mean, I'm sure there's a correlation with the amount of time that they've been held captive.
Like 3 years would probably set in the Stockholm syndrome, I guess. I guess like 3 weeks is not enough or something.
Yeah, most of, well, what about the, I mean, there was a couple cases where...
Especially age, too, like age probably has a lot to do with
there was a couple cases, 10, 20 years even in captivity where they just wanted to escape. I mean, there were escape attempts and then they couldn't escape.
Wait, do you remember that event, this, This was recently, maybe I think 5 years ago. Like this girl escaped from the basement and like went into the. Remember that? And he's locked. He knocked on the. Well, she was white, and then the neighbor was black, and he was like, screaming and yelling, "Help me, help me!" And then the guy was interviewed afterwards, and he was like, "Yo, if a white girl," it was pretty funny, but if a white girl like asking like a black dude for help, there's something wrong. I
I
don't
don't
know, it's
remember that.
interesting.
I don't remember that interview,
But
but
he like yeah, a friend actually was like, man, he was so funny that he needed to start his own show. But I don't know, you guys can look that up. But
yeah. So no, I think it's pretty rare. I mean, I don't think that that's even close to the default. So anyway, regardless of that, I think yeah, you're reaching kind of far to try to justify some of this. But I don't know. Maybe people agree with you. I don't know. I think it's mostly in poor taste, but everybody's got a different sense of humor, so and everybody's got a different what appeals to them entertainment-wise. But
well, I wasn't defending. I'm just saying, like, it depends on what the presentation was. I mean, if the presentation was like a ride, like a freaking circus ride, then it's been poor taste. But if it's the presentation is like this, like the psychology of whatever Stockholm syndrome or the psychology of
I would still
torture.
say that's in poor taste if you need a subject, so it's still kind of set up like a ride or experiment with someone having to deal with very traumatic
Yeah,
things.
I guess.
And
Yeah,
especially
I agree with you on that. Because, like, especially that freaking crime one. It's not like a. It's not like a.
there's
It's not
family
like a
members
fucking.
of victims walking around. So that's why I said you were reaching.
That is kind of messed up. Because, like, if you. Yeah, that's messed up. Because, like, you've imagined every scenario about what happened to your child, and
Yeah, well,
now
that's
you're
what I'm
seeing a
saying.
freaking.
The venue, it's
Yeah,
the
no,
wrong
I understand
venue.
exactly. I'm just kind of like taking all these perspectives. I don't know.
Playing devil's advocate.
Sort of, I guess.
Exactly like that. But anyway, so the yeah, so we're like, do you feel like true crime has risen in popularity? Because I personally.
I don't notice. I guess because I'm in one. But yeah, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, see, I mean, there's entire networks now dedicated to true crime. I mean,
I mean, I thought it stayed the same because America's Most Wanted. Now we have
yeah, but those are
Mindshot, and
show. There's a shows now. There's entire networks and channels.
well. Also, I mean, it's not entirely because of the genre, but it's because of the media of podcasting and blogging and all that
Well,
stuff.
now for the third time, I've been trying to say the same thing. It's entire channels on TV now are dedicated to true crime. So that has nothing to do with podcasting. Or, I mean, if anything, it's in spite of it because you have alternative
Well, I
media,
don't
which
know. I'm sure there's some like metrics out there that show the rise of true crime or whatever.
well,
Sure.
if there weren't entire channels dedicated to true crime before and there are now, wouldn't you say that's a rise in popularity?
Well, I wasn't sure that it was,
Well, I just mentioned it
but
three times.
yeah, but what channels are they? What are they called?
Discovery ID now. I believe that's all true crime. Oxygen Network has shifted.
God damn, really?
Or at least maybe there's two Oxygen Networks. I don't know.
I
Or
don't know, like, cause TV is dying, so I guess, like, I'm thinking maybe these are on Hulu and Netflix and shit like that.
no, on TV.
Actually, they do have dedicated series on Netflix land on just true crime, so like the Bundy tapes and stuff. So
Yeah, there's a ton. I mean, you got it. I mean,
you got
HBO always had
Avery.
true crime shows. Yeah. Netflix is big, but yeah, no, it seems like it's rising in popularity. And one of the man, it's kind of hard to do the podcast when you keep playing devil's advocate. Like I'm trying to move forward. Like I'm trying to say, like
Okay,
it's kind
move on to your next thing. What is like I accept that
the reasons we're discussing the reasons why they're kind
that
of
they're
becoming.
surviving in
Like, do
popularity.
you really think the average person on the street is that much more morbid than they
Okay,
were
so
10 years ago?
let's explain why. I mean, it's kind of like the independent media system that we have.
Well, did you hear my last question?
I forgot.
Gotta pay attention, man. I said, do you think the average person on the street is more morbid in general now, today, than 10, 20 years ago?
Morbid as a negative about that world, or
No, morbid as in, oh, I gotta check out the Bundy tapes, or like, or just intimate knowledge of Ted Bundy serial killers. Like, they're just more familiar with it. Whereas 10, 20 years ago, they'd be like, oh yeah, serial killers exist, but I don't really want to think about that. I'm not gonna go binge watch a series on a serial killer. That's dark. I wanna watch some
Yeah, no,
comedy.
I know a few people like that. They just can't. They'll watch a fiction, story, but they can't watch true crime because it's just too much for them because it's real. They can't.
Yeah, I mean, when I before doing the podcast and the previous years before doing the Mindshock True Crime podcast, yeah, I normally avoided it. But what's weird is every now and then the mystery aspect, like the puzzle solving mystery, it's so mysterious. I mean, one of the reasons Unsolved Mysteries was so popular, like everything, aliens, Bigfoot, whatever. The paranormal phenomena, because you don't really know, and that mystery, there's something so appealing about mystery. So of course that's present in true crime as well. So every now and then there'd be some really mysterious cases, like obviously
I
Maura
would
Murray.
say,
That's
yeah.
one of the most
I would
mysterious.
say, yeah. I would say, like, for that kind of personality, the problem solving type personality. I mean, that gets into true crime,
Yeah, but even aside from that, just
like
in general.
logic, logicians, and
But even aside from that, in general, just the mystery of it, I think there's some crossover appeal. For example, Maura Murray on the Oxygen show, that did pretty well. And people that weren't even really into true
Yeah,
crime
they don't.
were into that.
Yeah, you're right. That's cool. Yeah, people don't like the question
Yeah,
of
they want to know.
not
People want to
knowing. Yeah,
know.
they don't like not knowing, so they have
Yeah.
to research it.
Yeah, definitely. So, and I think that gives true crime a lot of its popularity. But on the darker side, where all the details are known, there's a certain group of people, they're just fascinated with serial killers. I mean, look at the people that the, I don't know, what do they call them? Do they call them serial killer groupies, I guess? They write to serial killers in prison. They want to marry them, and they do. Like, that's a different kind of morbid curiosity or morbid fascination.
Wow, that is weird.
Yeah, the women who think
So
it's.
you're saying it's not even like a Stephen Avery situation where they think he's innocent. They
Oh, no. Well, you
these
didn't know
people
about
actually
this?
believe
You
now
didn't know
they
about this?
actually not really, but
No,
they
they know they're
actually
guilty. They know they're guilty. I mean, they have their crimes photographed. I mean, they're
Yeah.
just groupies. Now, what's weird is
So
I
what?
always thought those people were just crazy, insane, and evil, but here's the thing, they're not. It's
Yeah,
well,
they're regular people and shit.
some of them are not. Well, if you stop interrupting me, I'll tell you.
Okay.
They don't want to kill anybody. They don't want to hurt anybody themselves. They just think it's cool, or like the serial killer is like, he's like the bad boy. Now, they don't want him to kill anybody else. They don't want to be involved in it. I mean, I'm sure some of them do, but a certain percentage of groupies, I'd probably even say the majority, they just think it's cool. It's like he's a celebrity serial killer. They think he's a
So
nice guy.
it's like the taking the extreme of like that principle that women want to turn alpha males into beta males and just
I don't know about that, but yeah, I wouldn't say
like
that.
they want to tame the craziest lions and stuff, so
I mean, I'm not gonna go into that psychological aspect of it. I don't know. I'm just telling you what I saw, and if you stop interrupting me, I can finish what I saw, and then you can give your opinion on it. So they seem to think that the guy's just really cool. And they don't even necessarily make excuses for the murders. Like, I haven't even seen them say, oh, well, they deserved it. No, they're like, oh, the guy had a troubled life. He might have killed some people, but he seems like a nice guy. I want to marry him. So that's the attitude of some of these groupies, where it's just this morbid fascination with this guy's a serial killer, but they want to go out with him anyway. They want to marry him anyway. And some of them do. And some of them actually. I don't know if they continue killing people, but the murderers, the serial killers that get out, whether they get out on a technicality or whatever, and they don't kill again, there's cases where they live relatively happily with the groupie for however long, then maybe they kill again or get arrested on something else. But there's a certain span of time where they're happy together, and it's I mean, what kind of morbid fascination does a person have? To be fascinated to this level of with serial killers. Now, that has nothing to do with mystery. That has nothing to do with whether they're innocent or guilty. That's just a certain percentage of humans that are just fascinated with other humans that can just take lives. So that's pretty much what I've seen with certain groupies. You didn't know about this? Really? You didn't know about serial killer groupies? Wow, man. Maxwell lives under a rock on Mars. Well, now that you know, what do you think about it?
It's interesting.
You never want to talk when I ask questions. You only want to interrupt when I'm talking.
Well, I don't know what to think about it. I mean, they're intrigued. I guess they're bored. They're intrigued by a murderer, and they wanna change people. Like, it's the biggest. Women look at men as projects, right? So they want to go out and change them for their families and shit. So they look at the serial murderer as the epitome of projects.
I mean, maybe a certain percentage, but I wouldn't say that from what I've seen. That from what I've
I'm
seen,
sure
they don't.
the women will comment on the video and be like,
Yeah,
yo, Maxwell's right.
there's a
They
lot.
look
I
at
mean,
men as projects and shit.
yeah, I'm sure some do, but I mean,
But I wouldn't go with a murderer because that's too much of a big project for me.
are you done?
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't say that at all because you're generalizing so much. I'm sure there's a certain percentage. I don't know about big or small. And then there's another certain percentage where women are, there's certain women that they want the cool guy that's not a project. They don't want to have to deal with someone they're going to have to fix. They think that he's the coolest guy in the world and they want to be with him. That's the whole bad boy appeal. So, I mean, I'm sure there's all different types of people, but for someone who didn't know about serial killer groupies, you seem to have ascribed a gigantic generalization to all of them within mere
Well,
minutes of finding out about.
I wasn't like, I didn't mean to generalize. I'm just saying, like, that's the psychology behind it, I think.
But how would you know that that's a psychology?
I don't fucking know. I'm just guessing because you asked me, like,
Well, you probably shouldn't start. Well,
because you said I have no responses. I'm like, oh, I guess this, and then so.
starting well, you actually interrupted me while I was talking with this one. You actually said they probably just want a project, and it's the ultimate project. You started with that. You didn't say
Yeah,
maybe. You did.
it's a generalization, so it's false. I mean, it's not like I'm not stating that it's not I'm not stating that this is fact. This is the psychological principle that's been
Well,
researched. And
when you start a comment with they probably, it seems like you are.
okay, so I should say they probably not, or they
You go from probably to probably not this.
so they I should say they're probably not thinking about that.
Right, well,
They're probably not thinking about.
getting
They're
this
probably not likely to think of them as projects.
getting this podcast back on track. The fascination aspect of it, because it is you probably are right about the aspect where they're bored, because if they weren't bored and they were living an exciting life with exciting men in it and they had their fa they were doing whatever they wanted to do, why the heck would they be writing a serial killer in prison? I mean, that's a good point there. It probably is that boredom probably has a lot to do with it, but across the board, though, let's move on from the serial killers and the groupies. But people in general seem to always be fascinated by crime, violence, murders, because look at the history of newspaper and how crimes are reported. Like even in Jack the Ripper, we have a very, very good Jack the Ripper series. If you haven't checked that out, check that out. But that was kind of the rise of sensationalist journalism within true crime. I mean, that might have been one of the first. It wasn't the first case. I mean, there was a couple beforehand, even possibly almost 100 years before Jack the Ripper, but which was 1888 was Jack the Ripper. But Jack the Ripper was like the big one because by then there were more newspapers, there was more sensationalism. So it's kind of interesting to go back and see the history of sensationalism in newspapers regarding the reporting of true crime. Jack the Ripper strikes again. It's like they want to get your attention. They want to drag your emotions into it. They almost want to breed this fear, this fear culture around it, not just to drum up interest and sell more newspapers, which is obviously part of it, but it's almost like everything's an attention grab, like all different types of advertising for different types of companies. It almost seems like true crime has become its own attention grab and people become fascinated. I mean, there's big cases. Obviously, OJ was a big one. I mean, you had, what was it, Casey Anthony, that big case. There was Scott Peterson, that was a big case. And then Chris Watts was the latest big case. People are just fascinated with people killing their family, people with killing random people, serial killers. What do you think is the root cause of that fascination that kind of feeds this true crime genre?
I don't really know.
No musings about psychology, Maxwell?
Can you repeat the question again?
Ah, Maxwell Army. What do you think is the psychology behind this interest in true crime? Like, look at these recent cases in the news. You remember Chris Watts? He snapped and killed his family. I mean, it was all over the news, but there seems to be a lot of interest in some of these bigger cases. Sometimes I forget you live under a rock on Mars, but yeah, some of these big, okay, O.J. Simpson, you remember that one. There was so much interest in this. That one was slightly different because it was a popular figure. O.J. was, a celebrity, football player, movie actor. But in some of these other cases, Chris Watts was nobody. Scott Peterson was nobody. I mean, there are some of these big cases where this person is not a celebrity, but he becomes like a pop culture celebrity, true crime celebrity, basically. I mean, he gets a ton of letters in prison, and people just follow the case. A lot of people follow the case. What do you think is the psychology behind this interest in these people who just randomly kill their family or serial killers? Like, what is behind the interest? What causes this morbid fascination?
I don't know. I think figuring out the shock, like for themselves, like would I ever kill my own family? Because like that's kind of weird. Because I love my family, that kind of thing. What would drive someone to kill their family? So they try to figure that out. Because I don't want to be in the same position. Because I don't want to kill my own family. That kind of shit.
Well, that's pretty dark. That led me to another thought. That's pretty good insight. I hadn't thought about that. That's a very good insight because what if deep in the darkest part of their psyche, they think they might be capable of it as well. So that's why they're so intrigued. It's kind of like
Yeah,
everybody's got a dark side.
it's like unconsciously exploring their unconscious.
Yeah,
I don't know.
because everybody has a dark side. That is a good point. The dark side of human nature. That is a very good insight, Maxwell. That is a very good insight. I think that might have a lot to do with it. And people's fascination with serial killers in general, kind of thinking, well, could I, would I ever, everybody likes to think they wouldn't be able to be capable of it. But, a small part of your brain might be thinking, man, all humans might be capable of this. So once you realize that, I
Yeah,
mean, is it,
put in a serious position. So I think that's probably one of the reasons. Like, what caused this person to, like, if it's like purely somehow brain triggered or something, like they want to figure that out. They want to rule that out or something, or they want to rule out the other reasons, which are like stress factors, relationship, cheating, that kind of thing. Like,
yeah, for sure. And if you
So I
haven't
don't know.
checked,
They want they you know, they want they just want to figure it out.
if you haven't checked out our The Science of Evil, Nature versus Nurture, a podcast we did on what causes an individual to become evil, so to say evil, serial killers or people that snap, the whole nature versus nurture debate, we go over that on that podcast. But yeah, that's a good point because if people really don't know what they're capable of, it's a lot easier to believe, oh, this human's just a monster. This serial killer is just a monster. I'll never be like that. But if you have that little bit of doubt in your mind, you don't even realize it if it's subconscious. Just exploring the nature of what humans are capable of, that is a morbid fascination. And that might be the reason people might think, could you ever be driven to this? And are there circumstances that are that bad that could ever drive you to do this? That's creepy to think about because I'm sure most listeners out there, they're gonna say, yeah, like you said, they love their family, they're never gonna kill their family. Like, how could this happen? It's almost like a disbelief. So it's kind of like, it's almost like watching an accident on the road. Like, you don't want to look at it, but you can't help but look at it. Do you think that's why certain people follow true crime? It's not even that they necessarily want to, it's just like they can't help but to.
That's a good analogy with the accident. Like, they don't want to look at dead people, but they kind of turn their necks.
Well, for me, yeah. Well, for me, that's one part of true crime. I don't go down that route. I don't do autopsy photos. I don't do dead body photos. I don't want to see the crime scene photos unless the body's not there. That's
Well,
just.
for me, I think for most people, like when I look at an accident, like I kind of see like how much damage there was. Like I look at the cars, and I try to figure out what caused this what was the accident like if I were to replay it in my mind. So this was a head like this was a head-to-head collision. This guy made her left turn. You can figure it out. I mean, like depending on the damage of the car, like oh, this guy made a left turn too early, or the guy didn't see him, or something. And then you see the people sitting on the curb with ice on their head, and that kind of thing. Like just so you try to figure out which car they were in. So it's.
Yeah, definitely. People kind of, yeah, you want to almost make sense of it. When something is so senseless, I think it's human nature to try to make sense of it. So then they're hooked. They're hooked on these true crime cases, these serial killers, and they watch these serial killer interviews. But yeah, I mean, I don't go that far. I'm not into the grisly aspect. I don't want to see any people getting killed. I don't want to see the aftermath of people getting killed. For me, it's mostly the mystery side of it. And of course, anything done to bring awareness to prevent this kind of thing from happening again. And I think that's another aspect we need to move on to right now. If you understand the circumstances, the psyche, I mean, I think all people want to prevent any kind of sense, well, good people want to prevent any kind of senseless crimes, kidnappings, murders. So it's almost like you're watching these shows or programs to try to understand how this could have happened and to take precautions to prevent it. Because I think even in the 60s and 70s, I don't think true crime was that popular. You know, kids played out on the streets without supervision. I mean, even as recent as probably the 90s, there wasn't this aura of fear, this culture of fear and fear-mongering where anybody could be kidnapped at any time. Even though that was true in the 70s, I mean, some of these cases are really, really heartbreaking. You know, kids are just riding a bike a block from their house and some guy pulls them into a van. So now you want to learn, you know, a certain side of it. Humans, I think, want to learn how this situation could have happened and then just take more precautions because awareness, you know, knowledge is power, and being aware of how some of these criminals operate and how some of these situations unfolded, you know, that could help some people be more careful in their lives. You think that has something to do with it?
There's a lot of talk there, but like, can you sum up what?
Oh, Maxwell Army. Well,
I mean, I was following, but like.
one of the aspects of people's fascination with true crime, I think, is to understand how situations unfold and how certain individuals behave to protect themselves and their families and kind of move society in a direction where more precautions are taken. So
Oh
criminal.
yeah. That, oh, definitely. That's. Oh yeah. That's a good point. Like that's a big like that's a big aspect of the interest. Like they're trying to learn from this
To
true
make
crime
sure, yeah.
event to make sure that it doesn't happen to them.
Yes.
But yeah,
Yeah,
that's
yeah, yeah.
definitely like how to avoid murderers and how
Yeah,
to
just warning
even
signs.
like yeah warning
Warning
signs from
signs.
like behaviors like let's say I don't know like coworkers who act kind of similar to that criminal
Yeah.
then
Profiling.
you know
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, also, just the other thing I said is like.
Also, especially like since the fact is that most murders are done by people you know, so.
Yes, but the other aspect of what I was saying was, you know, kids playing in the streets alone. When you're more aware, you watch a lot of true crime shows, you're probably not going to let your kids do that. You know, you're going to want adult supervision at all times. You're not going to, you know, go ride your bike to your friend's house and you never see them again. I mean, it's weird. You don't want to be too paranoid to the point where you can't live your life, but I think being aware of situations where this could happen. And I think the other aspect of it is, I think a certain part of it is
You know,
human.
wait, hold on, let me interrupt you, because that kind of reminds me, like, how I grew up and stuff, because I was always alone by, like, in streets that are deserted and stuff, like, man, I could have been the perfect victim, dude.
I actually had a run-in when I was a kid. I had a run-in with a guy that tried to get me in his car.
Oh, shit, what'd he
Yeah,
say?
I never told you this story, Maxwell.
I'm not
No, I
sure,
think I want to
maybe
save
you
it. I
did.
think I want to save it for a different podcast. But what's funny is I wasn't that little. I mean, not funny, but I wasn't that little, so I was a little bit. I was a little bit. I was an older kid, and I wasn't that small. I was athletic, so I was actually quite shocked that he would even try to pull that off. Because in my brain, I was like, I think I could take this guy. And I had one other encounter at a rest area. when I was much younger, and that one was really creepy. I got a really bad vibe from this guy that was just like following people into bathrooms and stuff.
Oh, shit.
And yeah, it was the middle, it was super late. I mean, luckily my parents were there, but they let me go into the bathroom by myself, which was probably not a good idea. So if you're listening out there, if you're stopping really late, I mean, nothing, you know, he followed me back out because I guess he was gonna see if I was alone or
You
not.
gotta watch bathrooms, man. Like a lot of like weird shit happens in bathrooms.
Well, luckily there was another person there. He didn't try anything in the bathroom, but when we were walking back outside, he followed me. So he was in the bathroom. He didn't go to the bathroom. He was just standing by the door. There was another person in the bathroom, luckily. I rushed out. The other person came out, and then he followed me out, I guess, to see who I was with, because if I wasn't with anybody, he might have tried to kidnap me. And this was when I was really young, so I couldn't fight him off. But anyway, the point I was making with all that, I can go into more details in a more relevant podcast, but and what's funny is I kind of forgot about those incidents for a lot of years until I started reading more about true crime cases. I was like, oh yeah, I had some close calls myself. But regarding the deserted streets and all those things, you want to keep your kids safe. So the next point I was make is that humans, they really like the illusion of safety. Not to turn this into a gun control topic, but I think that's one of the reasons people want to kind of some people want to restrict all guns, completely make all guns illegal. So you're going to take the guns out of homeowners, I mean, old women, single mothers who can't really protect. I mean, how are they going to protect themselves against a gang of guys, even with no weapon? If like a gang of 10 men broke into their house, what are they going to do? You know? So I don't know if taking the guns out of the hands of these, you know, otherwise defenseless people that are too weak to fight people off, they need guns. But it's kind of like a knee-jerk reaction where they want the illusion of safety because it's almost like they pretend there's no black market, they pretend there's no criminals, they pretend that criminals follow laws so that nobody could get their hands on guns, because that would be a good world where there were no mass weapons, you know, weapons that could kill so severely. That'd be nice, but that's fantasy. That'll never happen because there'll still be people out there with knives, swords, battering rams, flaming torches, brass knuckles. I mean, you know, you can't really def unless you're also one of those types of people, you're a fighter or a soldier, you're not going to be able to defend yourself without a gun. So these kind of emotional pleas or illusions of safety, I think that gets people too. So even like the JonBenet Ramsey case, the book Perfect Murder, Perfect Town, it's creepy when these small towns and neighborhoods that are really peaceful and idyllic, they're Americana. They're symbols of peace and freedom, and they're where you want your kids to grow up, the suburbs. And with all these true crime cases coming out, where you have these predators and serial killers stalking people, killing people, abducting children, it's almost like nowhere is safe and the world is not safe. And a lot of people really want that safety or the illusion of safety that they can never have. And I think that's also behind some of the morbid fascination with true crime, because some of these neighborhoods and towns, they're supposed to be peaceful and safe. They're not supposed to be the stomping ground of predators. So it's almost like the American dream gone wrong. And it's, yeah, people just, they want, they can't figure it out. They can't wrap their head around it. And it's so, it's rough, you know, reading about these cases, watching these documentaries about these cases, they kind of draw you in because it's almost like it's not supposed to be this way, but it is. And it's just very fascinating. Agree or disagree, Maxwell Powers?
Agreed.
So yeah, I think those are the primary factors behind people's morbid curiosity, morbid fascination. The one last group of people that we haven't talked about, which is very, very dark, are the people that have these urges and desires themselves. So would-be serial killers would, of course, be fascinated with other serial killers. Like, how did they get away with it? You know, the ones that
Man,
got caught.
that's funny. I haven't really thought of that. Like
Yeah, the ones.
I can see like serial killers like binging on Netflix
Oh yeah, well, also if they're
true
doing,
crime stuff
yeah, if they're
like
serial.
to learn from their plays and shit.
Yeah,
Like
exactly.
I can't make that mistake.
Yeah, so would-be serial killers are doing their research, watching all these documentaries, podcasts, like how did these people get caught? When they were successful, how were they successful? And just people, and also I think more people who are just might have mental illnesses or Or in that category where they're too scared to ever be a serial killer themselves, so it's almost like they're vicariously, like certain sick people, they're vicariously living through real serial killers because they're too scared to kill anybody themselves.
Oh,
So, and they don't
yeah,
want to do
sorry.
movies because movies are fake. So they have to
Yeah.
watch these documentaries where they get this thrill of killing or
I can see
causing
that happening.
carnage.
Kind of like with like fighters watching fights. Like
Oh, yeah.
you can't live out your fights because it's kind of like illegal or whatever. So you live out through the televised fights.
Yeah, some
See
kind of
how it works.
vicarious thrill ride
Yeah.
for people that
Yeah.
want to be serial killers, but they're too scared.
Yeah.
So, or they have too much of a conscience, but their dark side is dominating, so they really want to. They just don't. So, yeah, I mean, I think we covered a big spectrum of a lot of different reasons, a lot of different people that are attracted to true crime for different reasons. But let's close the podcast out with this final thought. Where do you see the trend going? Do you just see true crime becoming more and more popular? Because with the way the news is, with the way media is, I mean, everything's getting darker and darker, and the fear-mongering vibe as we march towards a 1984 police state. What do you think?
I'm actually just this came to mind. This is kind of it's a sick thing to think about, but well, I'm not sure if this exists or anything, and I'm not telling the murderers to think of it like this, but I haven't seen like a documented blogger crime person like documenting his kills on like I don't know, that's sick.
Yeah,
Like
that's really that yeah, that'd be real
I
that'd be
can
really
see, yeah,
sick.
that'll be really sick. I can see like let's say like this criminal sick psychopath like looking at all these documentaries and trying to plan out his exit strategy where he like documents all his crimes and then turns himself in and then publishes his thing and then becomes famous, that kind of thing. Like I don't know, it's kind of sick, but it's a sick thought. But
Yeah, I mean
I can see
yeah.
someone doing that in the future somewhere.
Well, statistically, it's bound to happen at some point if it hasn't already. I mean, there were serial killers who kind of filmed their own crimes. I don't know if they were thinking about turning it into a documentary or anything that crazy. They just, I mean, actually, a lot of serial killers film their crimes, I guess, to watch and relive it themselves, maybe. But
Yeah, I can see that. I guess that never reaches or that
you know what would
rarely
be
reaches
really
the
what
public
would be
audience.
really dark is a serial killer who has like a weekly podcast who documents his weekly kills.
Oh my God. And then
That's
pub
dark. Yeah.
like well, of course he can't publish it right away. I guess he can, but
He can if he tries. Yeah, if
if
he's.
he knows how to mask himself and stuff, so
Yeah, it's really dark, but I think we covered the spectrum of a lot of different interest groups within true crime. So do you think the genre is just going to be more and more popular as time goes on?
I guess. Well, you got Stephen Avery pushing it right now.
Yeah, I mean, as more and more podcasts come up, more and more cases are covered. Unfortunately, more and more people are being killed and going missing, and we have quite a few more podcast series, a lot more cases coming up, and there doesn't seem to be an end for these. Hopefully, cold cases can push to be there could be a push. I mean, I was actually just thinking this earlier today while I was driving. If they pulled all of the speed trap cops in the country off of just trying to catch people speeding, and they put a lot of money and time and energy into educating them to become really good cold case researchers and cold case detectives, how many cases could be solved?
That's a good idea. I mean, instead of building up their tax base,
Yeah.
stealing off the people, like they can actually do something more
Not to mention, I
productive
mean,
with that.
is there any evidence that speeding tickets actually deter speeders? I mean, every time I go out, there's people speeding. It's like,
I would say yes, but I mean, because it's happened to me. I
oh,
mean, I wasn't, I
you
was,
used
I
to be
was,
a
I
serial
wasn't,
speeder?
I wasn't speeding on purpose. Like I don't like speeding on purpose, like because I'm not like a, but I've gotten 2 speed tickets, so like I rather than being unaware of like my speed, I pay more attention to it. Like
Oh,
it's
well,
not
I'm
like a
talking about the
goal.
people that speed. Yeah, but the people that speed on purpose, they don't care about the cop, especially if they're rich and they don't care about the ticket. I mean, it doesn't really do anything. It's kind of like, you know, like it's wouldn't resources be better allocated to trying to solve cold cases and bring closure to families? Not to mention, if more cases could get solved, I think that would be a bigger deterrent to a certain percentage of would-be offenders. Because as a serial killer, I mean, obviously the completely insane serial killers, you can't stop them no matter what. Like, they have an urge to kill and they're not going to stop. Some of them want to be in prison. Some of them kill themselves because they don't want to kill people. They just can't help it. They're just, that's their condition. But in the middle group of people, if cold cases were more solvable, especially now with DNA evidence, obviously there's a lot of problems with DNA evidence, but the general popular opinion is that DNA evidence is accurate and it does put a lot of people away. Obviously, unfortunately, a certain percentage of those people are innocent, but as DNA technology evolves, it's exposing the previous technology as inaccurate. And a lot of false positives, the based on thresholds and all these things that we've gone over those on DNA for Dummies on the Stephen Avery series. We're going to do a dedicated podcast on DNA evidence in general and the issues with DNA evidence. So we'll be going over that. But in general, it seems like it's harder and harder to get away with killing people because of all of the, I mean, we live in a surveillance state now. I mean, there's videos everywhere. DNA evidence, phone tracking. I mean, it's just harder to get away with it now. But obviously, certain people are still doing it. And the we went over stats. I mean, I think something like 60% of homicides remain unsolved. So those are not good statistics. I mean, that is not a display of competence by law enforcement. So if they really allocated a lot of resources into solving cases, not just cold cases, but homicides, you know, pull off every single speed trap officer. Pull off every officer arresting people for growing certain plants or collecting rainwater or whatever nonsense is going on that police are arresting people for. If you pool all those resources, get really good education for these officers to become cold case detectives, I think a lot more cases could be solved and are solvable. And of course, the victims of these crimes and their families, they deserve closure and justice. So more could be done to get that. Any final thoughts, Maxwell? The future of true crime?
Yeah, I don't know.
That should be on your next mug. I don't know.
Well,
Maxwell.
I was thinking of, when you mentioned that, I was thinking about like, is there a point of diminishing returns as far as like people trying to solve like cases? Like if there are too many cops, too many officers like working the same case. I don't know. Is there
Oh, I'm sure.
like a
It's not
diminishing returns on
there might
like.
be, but there's so many cases out there. You could just have one cop per case. I mean, there's thousands of missing persons cases. There's thousands of cold cases, if not tens of thousands. I mean, so yeah, no, there's I don't not to mention everybody, like we've talked about this before in other podcasts on how different people bring different skill sets or opinions to the table. We talked about this in our online sleuths podcast on how the more, you know, two heads are better than one, three heads are better than two. So I don't know about that diminishing returns. I mean, in ter if you're only looking at numbers of cases being solved per amount of officers working per the paycheck that they draw, I'm sure you can find diminishing returns. But if it's bringing closure to the family of a victim, I mean, are you going to say it wasn't worth it? I mean, I wouldn't say that. But I'm sure there's an optimal setup. But anyway, we hope you enjoyed another edition of Mindshock True Crime. If you like the podcast, you can donate to our PayPal. Just check the link in the description. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. Hit the bell for notifications. If you like the podcast, hit the like button. Feel free to share it across social media platforms. Any questions, comments, thoughts, suggestions, leave them in the comments section. Like our Facebook page. You can also check us out, Twitter, Reddit, Patreon. This is Bruce McGuire signing off.
And Maxwell Powers.
We'll catch you guys next time.